Welcome to episode 20 of the Over the Counter Podcast. I'm Mark Eastcheck.
And I'm Andrew Whaley.
Today we're going to talk about playgrounds, which you might wonder about because Andrew and I probably haven't been playing on playgrounds recently.
Speak for yourself.
Well, maybe I bring my daughter to the playground, but
yeah, actually, you've probably been on a playground.
I've been on playgrounds a lot more than you have. But there's been a big trend over the past 20 years.
Oh, for, yeah, at least, yeah.
25 years of playgrounds being dumbed down to the least common physical denominator, if that's the way to put it.
I mean, just like, or sanitized for your protection,
yeah,
from physical harm, or
yeah,
basically the litigical nature of American society being the rubric by which things are designed.
Yeah, you exactly,
know?
Right?
It's like, you know.
So now, if you go to a playground, right, there's no teeter-totter. Oftentimes there's no slide, or if there is a slide, it's made out of plastic and not metal, and
there's
it's not
no teeter totters.
No teeter totters are totally out. No merry-go-round. Remember merry-go-rounds? Basically, anything that was fun to do at the playground is being eliminated. I think swings are next. I think those are going to go next.
Oh yeah, that, because I mean, you can really hurt yourself on a swing, and that's why they're fun.
The absolute worst ones are these indoor playgrounds at airports and malls. Mm-hmm. Ever seen these things?
No.
Where basically, I don't even know how to describe this. They basically have eliminated all kinds of all play equipment, and the play equipment that they do have is basically like a giant shoe made out of plastic or something like that. And the kids are just supposed to kind of like, I don't crawl over it. I don't know. I mean, it makes no sense. But they're,
you know, and it's funny is that they, you know, the like ball pits and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the level of germs and stuff, and just like pee and everything that's in those.
Yeah, you don't want to know what's in those.
I'm really scared. I am just that generation that missed out on the ball pit, though.
Really? You never got to go into a ball pit?
I've never been in a ball pit.
I got to go into one.
Multiple. I'm 43. They stopped. By the time I was, you know, in my late 70s was when I would have been kind of crawling in ball pits. I mean, mid to late 70s. They didn't have ball pits back then. I missed that on all kinds
maybe,
of balls.
Maybe you just lived in the wrong part of the country. But, well,
I mean,
that's true.
I lived in the Midwest. I lived in a town of 4,000 people in the Midwest. But we went to St. Louis, and we went to, like, malls, and we went to stores.
Yeah, well,
and
maybe the anti-playground equipment people were there too.
I think ball pits are just not that old, is what it is. They didn't have them in the 70s.
Oh,
it's an invention of the 80s.
You missed out on the other chronological direction.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
They don't have ball pits anymore.
They don't.
I don't think so.
So I think that would be a really good thing to figure out. If there's this one little snapshot of a generation that's different than everybody else.
Because they got to play in a ball pit.
They got to play in a ball pit. And it turns out some sociologist 500 years from now is going to write a dissertation about
the effect, ball pit generation.
The effect of ball, you know, the ball pit generation.
Okay, so let's talk about the problem a little bit more. So the problem is strange in that there are lots of children that don't play like children play in the United States. And what I mean by that is that they don't run around. They don't jump up and down. They don't play on monkey bars because there are no monkey bars anymore. They don't get on teeter-totters because there are no teeter-totters. And they've had the sort of safety police nanny state / litigious culture bar them from all sorts of things that are really fun for kids to do. Tell them that they can't run around.
What happens at home in a typical family these days? I mean, I have friends that just have kids are just straight up free range. I have friends that like have they live in the country or whatever, and they just let all of my friends just let their kids still be just dangerous and have fun. Right, but I know there's a lot.
I don't think that's the typical
the little helicopter
experience.
Like, kind of the helicopter, yeah. Parents, you know, everyone's very scared, especially when other kids are over at your house, because then there's a litigious nature kicks in again, right? But I mean, do the kids still get to climb trees and stuff? I mean,
just imagine this, right? When you've got the vast majority of kids in some sort of preschool daycare type program from age 2 or 3 up, right? That, you know, you've got one adult to 20 or 30 kids in most of those circumstances. So, and those people are deathly afraid of getting sued.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that they don't let the kids do.
When they train fear in, they probably train fear into them. They train them. They train them that you don't climb a tree.
Oh, that's dangerous.
That's dangerous,
right? Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, the thing that started this conversation between you and I was there's an article in The Atlantic called The Overprotected Kid. And then they talk about a documentary called The Land, which is a one of many of these experimental playgrounds in the UK. This one happens to be in Wales, I think. And it's just basically a junkyard. It's full of all kinds of cool stuff, and the kids build fires and stick stuff in them. They roll, they stick each other in tires and roll them down the hill.
Do they pay like an entrance fee to get
in? No, I think it's just it's the neighborhood park. And when it opens, they open the doors, and it's just it is like the coolest bunch of found object bizarre. It's Fat Albert. And the Fat Albert gang, like back in the, you know, that they used to play in the junkyard on that cartoon. It's kind of like that, right?
You know, actually, what it reminds me of is like Juarez, Mexico, or something, where you have, you know, whole villages of people living on basically a dump.
Yeah.
You know, and the kids go out there.
But I mean, this is basically just a bunch of found objects, a bunch of old chairs and stuff, and rope swings and stuff that people have built, and there's like all these weird. There's old tools and stuff and everything, and they just go out there and they play. And it was great. There's inevitably someone always builds a fire in the tin drum. There's different places to build fire. These kids always build fires. They love sitting and poking at the fire, sticking things into the fire, and they talk a lot about the benefits of playing with fire and all the things that it gets you. And it's funny because in that Atlantic article, there was something, a paragraph that I thought was spectacular, and it started with a sentence something like, if a 10-year-old on an American playground started a fire, someone would call the police.
Right, yeah,
and
exactly.
And that kid would be put in counseling.
Yeah.
But anyone who's been around kids knows that they love to play with fires, right?
Yeah.
And they said that at this place, The Land, they've been open for 2-3 years. They've never had an injury more than just a scraped knee or whatever.
Right.
Because, you know, it teaches the kids to take risks, but to measure that risk and think about it and to be strategic and all that. And I know that's what we did when we were kids. I mean, yeah, you kind of dare each other to be the first one to jump off the rocks or whatever. And yeah, occasionally someone would break something every once in a while. But you grew up thinking, oh, I'm a little dangerous and I can handle danger. And I am okay in this world. I can handle it.
Well, yeah,
you know.
Well, so one of the other effects of this overly safe culture surrounding, especially really small children, is that it's basically produced the opposite effect of what it was intended to prevent. Did I get that right? In that you're trying to prevent kids from getting hurt or injured or becoming unhealthy by taking away fun play equipment and replacing it with really boring play equipment. And so what you end up with, though, are bored and obese children. So can I read a little bit of this?
Yeah, yeah.
This is from Lenore Skenazy, who wrote a book called Free Range Kids, has a blog called freerangekids.com. And this is from her website, communityplaythings.com, where she actually like sells fun play equipment that's really hard to find nowadays because no one will sell it because they don't want to get sued. Here's what she says. A new study of how preschoolers spend their days may make you want to run around screaming, which is apparently more than the tykes themselves do. After interviewing childcare providers from 34 very different Cincinnati area centers, urban to suburban, Head Start to high income, researchers found that kids spend an average of only 2-3% of their day in, quote, vigorous activities. And she writes, can you imagine that? Children spending 97% of their day not running around? It's like a desk job except with cookie time. Excuse me, apple time. When you consider that 3/4 of American kids aged 3 to 5 are in some kind of preschool program and a lot of them come home only to eat, sleep, and go back again, this is beyond sad. It's bad. Bad for their bodies, their brains, their blubber. Baddest of all are the reasons behind this institutionalized atrophy, the quest for ever more safety and education. I don't know if I want to read all of this, but toward the bottom she gives a really interesting statistic that what she describes as the biggest health risk of all is that 19% of kids are showing up at kindergarten already obese. So they're basically couch potatoes from the time they're toddlers.
Right, and it's like, here's the thing: is that especially with boys, look at this culture. We've created this idea that okay, here's what we have to do to get something done, to learn in the way that we have deemed you need to learn, and to be safe. And that basically comes down to sitting at a desk or doing almost nothing inside all day, except for these staccato moments of recess, right? And if you're a boy. And you're sitting at a desk 3 feet from a window on a pretty spring afternoon and you can't sit still, you have ADHD. Right. And you need to be put on Ritalin.
Yeah, we need to medicate you.
We need to medicate you to make you normal. But normal is defined as able to do what we think should be done. But it's completely unnatural. A boy shouldn't be able to sit still next to a window on a nice spring day if he's a boy worthy salt. And so what they've done is they've now said, okay, no, we got to start training these kids that this is normal to sit still from early on so that we can keep them off the Ritalin so they'll stay still in their schoolroom. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Well, and the other thing is that the United States is the only country, I think, in the world that diagnoses for ADD and ADHD. Other countries don't have those things.
Well, and then, I mean,
obviously they still have people who have those behaviors.
Right, I'm not
right. But they don't have a diagnosis.
I'm not ripping medicated on someone who's ADD. I'm ADD. I have been on Ritalin before. I mean, I would probably benefit from it now. But so there's an attentional disorder thing that really is there and it has to do with dopamine. But a real quick way to get some dopamine is to run around giggling and screaming and kicking a ball or chasing little girls and trying to throw a frog on them or something. I mean, that's when you're seven, that gives you a big boatloads of dopamine.
Sure.
You know, and in fact, there's a really, really great book called The Spark by Rady, R-A-T-E-Y. I can't remember the first name. Anyway, Rady and his partner were the ones that wrote the big book, Driven to Distraction, which kind of diagnosed ADD in America. And they talk about the connection between attentional disorders and exercise. He does. And this book, The Spark. And in Naperville, Illinois, they did a study where they had these kids do what they call 0 hour. And these kids are coming in, they're getting an hour and a half less sleep in the morning, coming in before homeroom, and they're basically working out.
Okay.
You know, treadmills running, they're running laps, they're lifting weights, they're doing all this stuff. And then they go into their first class, and they found that these kids' grades went way up, especially in that first class, right after their 0 hour. Because it turns out that whenever you actually move and tax your body and get your heart rate up and all that stuff, it causes this stuff called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF, and it's basically Miracle-Gro for synaptic connections and stuff, right?
So basically, I should work out every time before I go study.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. You should come down here to the exercise gym, lift a bunch of weights, and then read. Yeah, but so then in England and in a lot of places, I mean, I know I was in Scandinavia that this last study just came out of. I heard about it on NPR, where they did a bunch of more recess. The more recess you give them, the better they learn when they're not in recess. So they've started increasing more recess, less structured play, more kind of letting them run around and get crazy and just expend all that energy and get all their heart rate up, get all that BDNF flowing in their little heads. And then they go in, and then you give them some information. And if the kid's been running around like crazy playing kickball for an hour, and you bring him in, give him a drink of water, and then sit him down, he wants to sit down. So now he's tired, he wants to sit down, but he's alert, right? That's a perfect environment, both chemically and every way to
does
learn.
Does the same chemistry happen in adults in the same way?
Yeah. No, definitely physical activity before mental activity is a great combination. Yeah. So these people, this documentary, they created this place, and it's got risky play. The benefits of risky play is what it's all about. And it's funny, I was thinking about growing up and all the stuff that we did, you know, building this has been a conversation on Facebook here lately with a bunch of friends of mine, because of that article that I showed you about the girl. The girl being a 9-year-old girl was allowed to play by herself at a park. Now, what she means by herself is she was with 40 of her friends, and a bunch of other people's parents were there on a summer day, and her mom was working at McDonald's for 4 or 5 hours. They arrested the woman for child abandonment. And it's like, well, when I was a kid, I would disappear with my friends on our bikes in our small town all day when I was like 9. And it was just normal to run around and go to the woods and build a fort and play and stuff. And it was risky at times. And I think that builds a certain independence, a certain kind of confidence. And I was thinking about over like the most blissful moments of my childhood. And a couple that I came up with was like going to some random guy's house who's none of our parents. who doesn't have any kids, but he's bringing a bunch of cool tools, and he lives down the street. And we take a bunch of old wood we found that has nails hanging out of it, make a soapbox derby out of it that's only steered by, like, ropes. And then we go spend all day running it down with no brakes, running it down the biggest hill in town until you crash into someone's yard, hammer it back together, then go back up to the top of the hill. And it was the best thing on earth. It was
or like sledding.
Sledding, right.
You know, just, you take your sled, you go to the park, you go down the hill, your mom's not necessarily there. You know?
Right. Well, like, when I grew up, a lot of the time I was growing up, my dad owned a liquor store, which was basically like a package store. It was kind of on the corner in the neighborhood. It sold, you know, cigarettes and soda and chips and candy and a little bit of light groceries and all that stuff, magazine. It was the precursor to the convenience store. Convenience stores weren't really around. Like in the big cities, you had like the bodegas and stuff like that. It was a neighborhood bodega, basically. And my job when I was like 7 was to burn the boxes. You know, all these boxes. And so we had these 2 big 55-gallon drums out back. I would go back there, build a fire out of these boxes, and throw the boxes in and stand there, poke at them with a stick, and burn all the boxes. And I got paid, I don't know, $2 for every day that I burned boxes. One time, my dad gave me and my friend Matt a box of all the spent fluorescent lighting tubes that he'd replaced, and he kept all the old ones, and so we were supposed to do something with them. So remember, there's a drive-through 10 feet away from these drums, right? And we were out there with this big raging box fire going, throwing these giant fluorescent tubes into the fire, and then running around the corner and watching them explode, sending hot glass all over the backyard. And we're just erupting in giggles every time it did it. It was literally the funnest thing I've ever done in my entire life, is blowing up light bulbs in my dad's liquor store.
Wow. I mean, okay, so we didn't have box burning parties when I was a kid, but
that was a job. That was work.
It was a kind of rite of passage when you got to move from the audience to the participants at the 4th of July fireworks.
Oh.
Right? So, you know, there would always be a group of guys who were the ones lighting the fireworks while everyone else was watching.
No, you mean like families getting together? Yeah. Not like the big, at the park, big giant things.
No, but, you know, in Michigan, you can get stuff that's would land you in jail for a million years in Colorado. because you don't really have forest fires in Michigan.
Right, you know. Yeah, in California, there was like one little town.
In the whole state.
Maybe in the whole state. I know in the county for sure, Fillmore, California. If anybody's from Fillmore listening, shout out to Fillmore. And I had a little coffee house there, and it just cracked me up because it was the only place that you were allowed to sell fireworks. And so the street lines with fireworks stands.
Crazy.
Every church, every nonprofit, that's their main fundraiser for the year, is this big fireworks stand. Because people from LA drive up, always be an hour away. All these people come from all over the place to Fillmore. The restaurants and the stores all do well for a little while, and everyone buys fireworks because you can't buy them anywhere else. And it is the last bastion of freedom in Southern California. 4th of July in Fillmore is literally a demilitarized zone. I mean, it's like going through Beirut or something. So you're just driving through. There's things flying across the road and stuff. Man. It's beautiful. It's absolutely spectacular.
This whole thing about kids and playgrounds reminds me of our discussion of food.
Yeah.
You know, and like free range chickens and that kind of thing, grass fed beef, you know, where as soon as you take an animal like that out of its natural habitat, so to speak, and you force it through all these weird processes, whether it be eating reprocessed cow brains or whatever, it ceases to be what it was. I mean, not completely.
Which are not nearly as good as the processed cow brains. Yeah. Once you reprocess them, most of the braininess, it just isn't really left.
You know, or once you take a chicken and say, you can't eat bugs anymore, you have to eat this corn. That's it.
Right.
Only corn. You know, you might be able to bloat the chicken up to have supersized, you know, thighs and breasts or whatever, but it's not going to taste like real chicken
anymore. And you can really see it in the eggs,
you know,
right?
The worst for me is strawberries.
Oh, they're just dead.
Right. I used to go pick strawberries with my aunt when I was a kid, you know, and the strawberries weren't that big, but they tasted so good.
Right.
Because they were grown in dirt. But at a grocery store, you don't get strawberries that were grown in dirt for the most part. usually they're grown hydroponically so that they get bigger.
So these are hydroponic kids.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Especially in Denver.
Yeah.
they're all hydroponic, if you know what I mean, in Colorado. But no, they're hydroponically grown kids. That's what we're doing. We're basically doing to our kids.
Same thing.
That's a great analogy,
they're
Mark.
Bloating. Yeah.
We're doing to our kids what we're doing to our animals.
And to strawberries.
We're keeping them still in a pen, and we're feeding them only stuff that we think they should eat. Because it's been decided that it's socially just and it's safe for them, so we're just going to feed them a bunch of carbohydrates, and that makes them all jittery because their blood sugar is too high and they can't move.
Right.
So then we put them on Ritalin
to calm the jitters down.
I mean,
it does seem so simple, doesn't it, to fix these things?
Right. And it's like now let me tell you, let's go to the other end. Let's go to where I've seen it right. I have. Several friends are big Catholic families, a bunch of kids. My best friend and his wife have six, now almost seven kids on the way. My God, baby.
Almost seven kids?
Well, he's seven kids. One's in utero. He's a kid, but then it's going to be my God, baby. I'm so excited.
It's not the one where we're not really sure whether it's a kid
No,
or not.
It's a kid. It's certainly a kid.
It might be a pet.
And it's going to be the best one yet, too, because it's going to be my God, baby.
Okay. Right.
Anyway, but they live in the middle of a town that's a pretty nice town, pretty kind of well-to-do neighborhood, but they managed to find an old ranch that has a lot of land on it, and it backs up to some public land, and the kids are pretty much free range. I mean, they just let them do their thing. Where they can get to the road is blocked off by a fence, but the back of everything just backs up to the farmland and all this woods, and they just run around and chase the dog and play with the chickens and go build forts down in the woods and hang out. And it's like, so there's a dirty old farm dog named Banjo that runs around with them. And I mean, they just, it's spectacular. They come just like barefoot, dirty from head to toe, been gone for an hour down the woods playing. No, I mean, just having a blast. And they are the happiest, most well-adjusted, vivacious little kids you've ever seen, because they get so much stimulus. And then from our making our own fun episode, then they come home at night, and instead of parking in front of a screen nonstop, they watch movies and stuff. But mom and dad are playing music, and they cooked real food, and they sit down together and eat dinner. It's like it used to be. And wow, imagine that. It makes healthy human beings. It's almost like 6,000 years of civilization knew something. In it before a bunch of rich liberal 1%.
In the last episode, weren't you talking about how 6,000 years of civilization got us away from a diet that was ergonomic to our metabolic heritage? Now you're praising civilization.
Okay,
I think there's a little bit of hypocrisy going on here, Mr.
Whaley. I'm including hunter-gatherers as civilized.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, that would go back a little bit further than 6,000 years, wouldn't it?
Well, it would, yes. Yeah. So, okay, you caught me on my math. The point is that growing up in a more natural environment where you're still running around the woods and you're not, I mean, just now.
Well, okay. So the other thing to take this to, this is getting way far away from playgrounds, but is to go to new exercise research that's come out in the past, 10, 15 years about how interval training is the way to go.
Oh yeah.
But when you start thinking about it and researching, it makes perfect sense. If you trace it back to our, ancestors,
our metabolic heritage,
our metabolic
from
ancestors
the last episode,
or whatever they are, who were way back when, hunting down wildebeests or running away from animals or whatever,
right.
Where you wouldn't go run a marathon.
No.
You wouldn't go run 26 miles. But you might have to sprint down a rabbit to have lunch.
Right.
Or you might have to run away from something that was trying to eat you.
And climb a tree. I mean, it's
and climb a tree.
No,
but,
yeah.
But you would
walking or light jogging and then sprints.
Right. And so you would be eating, hopefully a lot of meat, but only occasionally, right, when you would get a deer or something. And then you would be
like
snacking
day,
on things like berries, right?
Right, yeah.
And you would be sprinting through the woods trying to attack your prey.
My God, man.
But most
I
of the time...
I think you've drank the paleo Kool-Aid, finally. Yes, you understand it.
But most
Let's
of the time,
go kill a buffalo and wear barefoot shoes.
I don't know. I'm not sure I want to engage in rabbit starvation. That sounds rather painful.
No, buffaloes have fat on them.
Besides, I don't want to get rickets or scurvy.
You don't do that if you're eating free-range meat and you're eating the whole body.
Yeah.
Anyway, so getting back to our topic here is the idea that we have now created. It's funny that I was telling you about like things like MoveNat and some of these modern exercise movements that are trying to recreate evolutionary movement, crawling, climbing, squatting, jumping, all this stuff. One of the things that the people that advocate for this kind of movement as exercise say is, look at kids. Watch the way they naturally move. They naturally have good posture. Yeah. They naturally squat and stand up straight, and they do this, and they run around, and they climb, and they use all these different muscle groups in different ways and different combinations. And what we're doing, though, is now these modern playgrounds they're building look more like gyms that are outside. They're built to work out on, so to speak. You know, they have like little activities for health or something. Like you walk up to them and you're supposed to jump back and forth over this very small thing that you're not going to trip on, or you're supposed to pull yourself up on this thing or something. And it's like it's almost you can't hurt yourself. And now we're basically taking kids and, for the sake of safety, moving them into an environment where they are mimicking the truncated movement of modern working out that the people that are on the cutting edge of working out are trying to get away from and trying to get back to the kind of movement the kids do when we're natural.
Right.
Which is so funny. It's like they're trying to we're going to end up with kids who sit at desks all day and work a job in a cubicle except for Apple time.
Right.
And parents who run around barefoot and climb and do everything different. It's like it's absolutely crazy.
To me, it just seems like we have like a societal neurosis or something. Like, why can't we just?
It's tort law.
Why can't we just be normal?
It's the litigious nature. Because if I invite,
why don't we just get rid of all the lawyers?
Right. There you go.
Well, they give all the money for. All
I wonder what kind of fatty acids are in a grass fed lawyer. I mean, we could start having like a lawyer roast instead of a pig roast. You know. It's yeah. I'm not. Before you email in, I'm not advocating cannibalism. But it's seriously though.
But I don't know. You paleo people might really get into that at some point.
Well, you know, no, because all the lawyers have been eating tofu, so they wouldn't really be considered grass fed. All these modern lawyers, yeah. They've been eating reprocessed.
They eat too much pizza in law school.
They're eating reprocessed foods. We need to figure out as a society. Do we want to have the recourse to just sue anybody for everything and a certain kind of safety that brings for the oppressed, not to be oppressed or whatever? But on the other hand, it's like, look, man, if I have a bunch of kids over at my house, say I'm married and I have a family and I have a bunch of kids over to the house and they're all in the backyard playing with my boy and they decide to climb a tree. Which is what boys have been doing for thousands of years, right? And one of them falls off the tree and breaks his arm, because that happens occasionally when you climb trees. It's part of the clean tree climbing process. All of a sudden, I can get sued and lose everything I have.
Sure.
Because I let someone's kid, with my kid, do the thing that kids have been doing for thousands of years, and it's good for them. But no, you should have been watching them. You should have you let them engage in, you know, dangerous activity. It's like, there's the rub.
Yeah.
If someone or now, if you let your 9-year-old play with her friends while you're at work down the street, or that other article I showed you where an 11-year-old girl asked her mom not to go into the store with her, and she sat in the car locked with a cell phone texting with the windows cracked on not a particularly hot day. And people called the cops, and the woman was arrested for abandoning her child in a parked car. She was 11. She could babysit for short periods of time under certain circumstances. And she can't sit in a car alone 50 feet as a crow flies from her mom on the other side of a wall with a cell phone in her hand. Oh, and the little girl that was at the playground. Think about how many days you and I went to playgrounds without mom and dad on a Saturday in a summertime or something during the day when mom's at work. You're running around with your friends on your bike. This little girl had a cell phone. We didn't have cell phones. So if a guy in a child molester white van with no windows on it tries to pick her up, at least you can call 911, but that never happens for the most part. That's the thing when it comes to like leaving kids and letting them run around the neighborhood or whatever. Everyone thinks there's people running around in these vans trying to get their kids, when in reality, crime right now, in that last article I was reading, crime right now is at roughly the same level as when gas was 29 cents a gallon.
I think you might poke a hole through the table if you do that again.
I mean, it's amazing to me. It's like there's let's look at the kids who do get like picked up or molested or whatever. Almost all of them know their attacker. It's not some guy in a van cruising the playground looking for the person whose single mom is at McDonald's working. It's your uncle's weird friend that you see all the time that you would actually get in the car if he picked you up, right? So you can let your kids run around the neighborhood. They're not going to get picked up for the most part. Now, I'm going to get sued for someone's going to let their kid run around. They're going to get picked up by a guy in a child molester van, and I'm going to be the one they sue. Great. That's awesome. You could call. I could call you Collect on Skype, and we can do this podcast from the prison.
Okay, so I don't even know where to go from here, but I do think we should get back a little bit to childhood obesity, right? Everybody recognizes.
I'm trying to get out of childhood obesity. I still have my childhood obesity. I just got a little baby fat to burn off. That's all. It's just...
Everybody recognizes that childhood obesity is a problem, right?
Back to obesity.
But what are we supposed to do about it? You know, I don't think the answer is to institute, like you said, adult-style workout programs for children. That's what they're trying to do, like with, you know, the First Lady and all this. The Play 60, you know, the Play 60 it's thing. Kids love to play if we let them play.
Right.
No, we don't have to make them play. We don't have to go say, you have to go outside and play. You know.
Well, the modern kids you kind of do to a certain extent because we've bred it out of them and we've given them all these video games.
And television.
And all this television and stuff. So you have to kind of force them out the door. But once you get them out the door,
they're going
to
have a great time.
Then they figure it out.
They're going to have a great time.
So, yeah, so we feed them the chicken that we were talking about earlier, the good chicken. We feed them the good strawberries that you used to pick.
Right, the ones that grow in dirt.
Right, yeah. So we feed them dirt berries and chickens, bug chickens, and let them run around and climb trees. Problem solved.
Grass-fed beef,
whatever. I mean, it's just so funny how now we're
having... And we got to get rid of all the lawyers.
And, well, we could feed them grass-fed lawyer.
No.
I mean, problem solved.
Okay, so, I mean...
Two birds, one stone. Two free-range birds, one stone.
The whole lawyer thing is so simple and yet so frustrating, right? That the lawyers have made a lot of money, so they give a lot of money to politicians.
Right.
And the number one thing that would fix our litigious culture is to set limits to lawsuits.
Right.
And to limit certain kinds of lawsuits to certain dollar amounts, that you can't sue for more than X number of dollars.
Right.
But that's the absolute last thing that lawyers want, because that would limit their income.
Exactly.
And so they give all this money to politicians to prevent that from happening, and they have succeeded so far. So
I mean, it's just weird. What we're doing now is, it's like, now we're at the point where imagine how much stuff, there's this pattern developing where you recreate what happened by nature, by art or intent, and now it becomes an upgrade that only the rich can afford to have, right? Like, I walk into a store and I say, I want a chicken. And they say, okay, here's a chicken, 99 cents a pound. I'm like, no, I want a chicken. Well, this is a chicken. No, I want one that was walking around eating. I want one that doesn't have a bunch of chemicals in it. Oh, you want an organic chicken. That costs more. Yeah, okay, so this was fed organic, vegetarian, soybean, and corn. I want a bug that was walking around eating bugs. I want a chicken walking around eating bugs. Oh, you want a free-range organic chicken. Yeah, because I want one that is relatively this. And basically what it comes down to is I want the chicken that my broke dirt farmer great-grandparents would have eaten. Oh, I'm sorry, that is an organic, free-range, locavore, you know, local, kosher killed, blah, 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 chicken. I mean, that's $22 a pound. We used to just call that chicken, but now we have this, whether it's kids' playgrounds, the processed food machinery, or, you know, the weird education where we lock them in these little, like, pens on these feedlots called schools and make them, you know, if you want to opt out of that, the new normal has become very non-natural, non-normal. And if you want to opt out of that and have the real normal, that's a premium that you have to pay for now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it just shows how much we are all really tied together, right? And that living in a culture really means something, you know, and for better or for worse.
Right.
And that we are very limited by the choices that other people make, by the decisions that people in power make.
Right.
And that's just part of what it means to be human, is that we're very, very interdependent.
I say we start a We started a political movement slash nonprofit or something to take over Western Kansas. You know that part where you're driving for the better part of a day, begging for a tree?
It's kind of the same as Eastern Colorado.
Right. Well, we'll expand the border. We'll do half and half. And we'll just make a new state, and we'll secede from the Union, what's called a Freelandia, and we'll just plant a bunch of trees and forests and just weird places. We'll graze animals, make a bunch of like land-style playgrounds where our kids can run around and build fires and stuff, and we'll just like hang out. Cubicles will be outlawed.
Okay, well,
it'd be awesome.
As Andrew is trying to build his personal utopia in Western Kansas and might be cavorting in a ball pit somewhere, I will probably be studying biblical languages that died a long time ago, and you will be eagerly anticipating the next episode of the Over the Counter podcast. I'm Mark Eastcheck.
And I'm Andrew Whaley.